Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, August 2nd, 2011, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Many of you are already familiar with the work of our featured guest this evening as the creator of ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.com, the website that has skyrocketed in popularity since she launched it last October. She's written 6 books, which can be found at Amazon and has been on their bestseller list. Links to Alexandra's work can be found in the comments section on our show page. She holds a degree in semiotics, the study of signs and symbols, and studied film production at the Sorbonne in France, as well as the New York University Film School. She'll be discussing a variety of topics this evening, since she's so well-versed. At the top of the show, we'll start with a 10-minute Belvelation from our own Belva Bloomer with the story of the miraculous healing gifts of Harvey Bevere. You may remember him from Lavendar's Crack Between the Worlds story. Then Alexandra will be joining us. We'll take a break near the second half of the show and welcome Michael Monk, whom many of you know from Facebook. Michael's demonstrations of hydrokinesis can be seen on YouTube, and that link is also in the comment section, at least it will be pretty soon, on our main show page. Check out his website, avatarenergymaster.com, where he is a healer and teacher of empowerment for other teachers. 10 minutes before the second hour of the show, Renee Barnett, producer of Bloodline, the movie, will be stopping by for just a few minutes to give you the details on the France tour our Starseed audience requested. All right, I'm hearing an echo, and I hope you are not. I'll have to check on that later. We have Purple Sage and Tammy on vacation this evening, so we'd like to welcome and thank Maya, our newest Starseed Radio Academy team member, for hosting the switchboard. Sierra's going to host the chat room and be on the air at the same time, so you go, girl. She'll be forwarding your questions to us from the chat room for those who can't call in. And if you can call, our number is 917-889-8292. Then press 1 so we know you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. As always, we ask you to be brief and please, only relevant questions or comments this evening. So we have a very busy show tonight, so I'm condensing my usual intro comments to this. Check out our website, starseedhotline.com. Our support forum at starseedhotline.ning.com. Register at Blog Talk Radio and click follow to help us out. And call 888-881-0881 to talk to us privately. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra.
Hello.
I'm here. Lavendar here.
Are you hearing an echo on my voice?
No, I'm not.
Yes. Yes, we're getting echoes back here, and the people online are also hearing an echo.
Okay, thanks for that. After we get rolling here, I'm going to hang up and call back in. So we are going to start off with our Belvelation. This will be about 10 minutes, and it is a story of a miraculous healer named Harvey. So you want to just get right into that, Lavendar?
Let's just start with that.
Okay, great.
I called Belva the other day and asked her if she would relate some stories about Harvey Bevere. If you remember, in Crack Between the Worlds, it was Harvey Bevere that was with me when we were at Giant Rock reading the Wadi Scrolls with George Van Tassel. And we had so many exceptional experiences with Harvey throughout the years. I look back on it now and really realize that this man that we called Harvey was really a high galactic being that was sent here to activate so many of us into our work. And when he would come to Belva's Beauty Shop, and at that time I had a little room where I was doing astrology charts for clients, I would step aside and we would use this room for his healings, and people would come from everywhere. And the things that I witnessed and saw at that time were just amazing. I wish now that I would have sat down and recorded more than I did. But Belva's got a pretty good memory, and so I've asked her to come forward and bring some of the Harvey stories. And so at this time, I'm going to do a Belvalation for Belva Bloomer, and she starts her story with this. I was in a car wreck with my husband driving. We were in our new Lincoln, and it was Christmas. I was on the passenger side, and I only had 20 or so Christmas cards to mail. They were all addressed, and I was applying the stamps. We only had 10 blocks to go from our shop to the post office, and I was busy looking down at the envelopes. He started to pass someone in heavy traffic, and a car came up on his left side really fast. He turned back into our lane, and the car in front slammed on the brakes. A cop had stopped a car about four cars on the street where there was no stopping at any time. We were in the middle of an eight-car wreck, and we were sideways. I hit the dashboard with my chin, knocking my front teeth loose and dislocating my jaw on the right side. This caused me to lose the hearing in my right ear. When you asked me about being deaf, I did not connect with that memory because I was not deaf. I only had the problem with one ear, and I went to dozens of specialists, and even though I told them just to put it in place, no one seemed to know what I was speaking about. I wanted someone to set it back where it belonged. Anne Margaret fell off the stage in Reno, and a famous surgeon repaired her face, and he was in Los Angeles. So I called and made an appointment and took off from work and flew to Los Angeles. I went to Beverly Hills to his office. A close friend met me at the airport and took me there. I filled up pages of reports, and he was not only famous but the head of plastic surgeon organization. We were sitting there waiting. His offices were full of dead stuffed animals, lions, tigers. Some were small like babies. I was just sick to my stomach looking at all the animals he had killed. I really wanted to leave, but I thought he was the one that would finally help me. It had been 2 years since the wreck. So I stayed and waited. He came in and motioned for me to follow him. He had me sit in a chair with a metal rod up the back and metal curved rods around each side of my head. I was facing a mirror, and he came up in the back of me with his hands behind his back, and he gave me a shot on the right side of my jaw, and blood squirted down my face and onto my white collar. I put my right hand up, and he got me on my left side. The pain was excruciating. It was cortisone. I had no idea what he was doing. Then he asked me when I wanted the facelift. I just wanted him to put my jaw back in place. I was frozen in pain, could barely speak, and my friend said I had to leave for the airport. I paid his bill, and she got me out of there. He was not the one. Another year passed, and a lady walked into my shop. She told me about a healer that had saved her life and promised to call me when he came to Las Vegas. She called about a month later, and it was on a Saturday. I was booked with appointments every 30 minutes, but he agreed to come to my beauty shop. I asked May, one of my customers, to answer the phone for me, and he walked in, an older, thin man in a suit with a small stool under his arm. He said, You both have your jaws out. Which one asked for me? I answered and followed him down the hall as he looked for a place to work. He found a room that was vacant and pulled up a chair and patted the stool for me to sit down. He wrapped his right arm under my chin and whack, he fixed it. He set my TMJ and probably some more. That was what I had been asking for all the time. And that was Harvey, a true miracle healer. He worked on my neck and back where I had been paralyzed when I was five. My mind was racing. Vernon, my husband, had been an Olympic champion representing the state of California, and since I had known him, he had many problems with his shoulders from dislocating his arms on the gymnastic rings. Surgeons wanted to operate and remove the bursa over his shoulder joints. I talked him out of that, but he was in a lot of pain. I went to Vernon and asked him to stop his work and come with me to meet Harvey. Vernon was a Taurus, and so when Harvey, it was like they were supposed to be together. Harvey took each arm and yanked really hard just one time, and it was fixed. Done. Vernon never had another problem with him with his arms or shoulders. May was still by the phone and keeping all the people waiting happy. So I sent her in to see Harvey and get her jaw back in place. Then I asked Harvey if he would come with me to my house to work on my mother. My mother was 86 when we moved her to Las Vegas next door to us so I could take care of her if she had a problem. And one day I was there as she made up her bed and she bumped her head on the bedside table. It was only the size of a dime. And I put some iodine on it. About 3 months passed, and then every morning on my way to work, I would stop by to see how she was. On one morning, I went there, and she said, "Who are you, and why do you keep coming over here bothering me?" She had a handful of paper towels that were on fire, and she was trying to light her small electric heater that was already on. I had no idea what had happened to her. I took her to a specialist for older people. He did not know her name or address. She did not know me. She did not know her name or address. She did not even know me. He wrote a prescription for Coumadin and told me that she needed to be put in a nursing home. That was not what I wanted to do at all. I found a book called Let's Eat Right to Keep Fit. I studied about Coumadin and never filled the prescription. It was a very dangerous drug. In that book, it gave me a recipe for pep-up drink. And I bought liquid vitamins and all the things that I could find to feed her brain. This was in 1960. I did not know a lot about supplements, but I knew that I healed my varicose veins with lecithin and vitamin E, and two raw eggs gave her the protein she needed. So we moved to a larger house. She had her own room and bath, and I fixed her pep-up drink three times a day. She would not eat anything else. She was healthy, so it had to be from the time when she hit her head that affected her brain. My work was 3 blocks from our house, so I would come home several times a day, but I worried about her, and finally I found someone that would come every day and stay with her. That was the best thing for both of us. So now, 3 years had passed, and Harvey was here to help me. I knew that he was my gift for helping so many people in this lifetime. I drove him to our house, and he was so wonderful to my mother. He told me that I was right. She moved the plates in her skull, and that shut off the blood to her brain. The pep-up drink had managed to keep the blood flowing to the brain enough so that it did not die. He did a cranial osteopathic movement, moved the plates on her skull till the flow of blood returned. Then he worked on her body and her ankles, and she was mad at me because he asked me to throw away her shoes so her feet would stay straight. You know, it took about 3 months, and it was around Christmas when she asked for Christmas cards, and without an address book, she wrote address and wrote notes to about 100 people and relatives. She had no idea that she'd been gone for 3 years. I have so many other fantastic healing stories to tell you about Harvey, but this was the beginning of my understanding regarding a true healer. And we all miss him so much. Okay, that's enough for now, Doc Belva. Back to you, Ariel.
Well, thank you so much, Lavendar, for reading that for Doc Belva. And I know that you had experience with Harvey as well and witnessed a lot of things that he did. So we are having a little bit of trouble with this new switchboard interface here. Lavendar, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I think the echo's gone, and that's one good thing. And we are waiting for Alexandra. And Alexandra, if you're on the switchboard, just press 1 because we have a lot of callers, and we didn't know exactly what number to be looking for. So, Alexandra, if you can hear me, press 1 so we know that you're here.
She might be calling on Skype. I'm not sure.
She might be. Well, let's just see. Hello, is this Alexandra from 410? Hello? 410-715. No, this is not Alexandra then. Okay, sorry. Keep listening. We're glad you're here. Well, you know, we are just having some, they have a new studio here at Blog Talk Radio, and it's going to be really, really cool, but I think it just might have a little bug or two. So, well, at 11, I think about 5 minutes to 11 or 10 minutes to 11 this evening Eastern time, Mercury goes retrograde. So, Lavendar, you want to give a little talk for those that don't understand what the ramifications of Mercury being retrograde are?
Yes. You know, about 3 times a year, we have about 3 weeks where Mercury does go retrograde, and the things that we have found through the years with Mercury retrograde is that your brain just doesn't work like it normally does. Now, people that are born with a Mercury retrograde, this is when it really straightens up for them. They love this time because when everybody else is out of sync, they're just perfectly in order. Some of the things that I've experienced with Mercury retrograde is I try not to sign documents or real important papers. I take the time, though, to regroup my thoughts for when it goes direct, I'll be ready to really fly. And speaking of flying, sometimes when you're flying in airplanes, you'll find that, you know, there's delays or you'll lose your luggage or people just don't understand what you're saying. On telephone calls, I notice that whatever you're saying sometimes, the person will think it's the exact opposite, and then arguments ensue. So it's just a time to learn to be patient and to just be aware that communications may be a little garbled. And, you know, take the time to regroup your thoughts for when it goes direct, then you'll be ready to, you know, put whatever agenda you have on your plate in motion. Because once it goes direct, you can really fly like an eagle. So those are the things that I would like to say about Mercury retrograde at this time. Did you find her?
I think so. I'm getting voicemails like crazy on our 800 number. So you and Sierra can take it from here while I come right back.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Okay, Sierra.
Yes. Hello.
So how hot is it in Arizona?
It's pretty hot today, and it's actually been muggy because it's sort of like our monsoon season. So when it gets as hot as it does with a little bit of humidity, it doesn't matter how much it is. It could be 20-30%. It's just, So I'm grateful to be in air conditioning right now, but I really do love it up here in northern Arizona. It's just beautiful.
It's at like 108 degrees here in Oklahoma, and we're just getting really roasted. So anyway, I wanted to ask you I know that a lot of people have asked me about your story, your abduction story, and I know that you've been working on getting the book ready, and we're really excited to know that you're writing this book, and that I understand maybe someone has offered to write your screenplay. Can you give us a little update?
Yes, actually. And it's actually through somebody that you had referred to me, Renee, and then she got me a hold of Zach. And I was just really, really impressed with him. He's done several movies and written several different screenplays and actually produced a couple of movies that have won Sundance Awards and different types of awards. And I had just the greatest talk with him. So here pretty soon, we're going to get set up to where he's going to write the screenplay because meanwhile, I have other talks going on with a couple other producers from, Prometheus Productions, who did Ancient Aliens, is working through a couple of other producers right now and is interested in my story, and then also interested in the walk-in phenomenon, also interested in Contact 2012 is what we're calling it, because, you know, it would be good for me to get my story out, and the purpose for doing that is to shed light on some of the things that the government has allowed to happen that they need to be held responsible for. But the most important message to get out there right now is what we can do for ourselves in the ascension process. So, you know, there's a couple different angles that are being worked for different TV programs, a possibility where we're going to get a few people together, like a psychic and a walk-in, and several different people. The treatment's being written for it right now, and the Sci-Fi Channel and the History Channel is interested in seeing it completed. We might do some short filming on a television program where we go to different sites around the world and we actually telepathically communicate with the ships and ask them to come down and be filmed.
Oh, great. That's great.
So that there's no longer this thing like, yeah. But as you know, if you go on to YouTube or onto the internet, you have to use your own discernment. We want to come back to our discernment, the conversation about discernment, but there's a lot of contact going on out there. And I don't know if you all have had your eye on the crop circles and what's been going over in England, but daily.
Can I cut in here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Alexandra is with us.
Oh, good.
Perfect. So, and if we had not so much to do tonight, we'd just keep on talking. But let's bring Alexandra on, and we got everything handled, folks. And Mercury is not going to get us tonight. Okay.
Sierra, when you come back on later, tell us about the crop circles, okay, when you come back later.
Will do.
Okay,
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah. Okay. As I said, Mercury might be going retrograde, but we are just going to try harder. And here we have now Alexandra Bruce. Welcome, Alexandra. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for having me. What happened? How long is Mercury going to be retrograde for?
Oh,
3 weeks.
Oh,
it's kind of early. It hasn't really gone in till then. Well, of course, it is Mercury retrograde in Cairo, Egypt, so I guess it affects us all. That's the way I kind of gauge it, by when it hits the big pyramid and comes this way. Anyway, Alexandra, I talked to you earlier today, and if you would, just give us a brief description of who you are and you're being a filmmaker and why you decided to put this wonderful website together.
Okay. I majored in film production and had my own production company right out of school and made many. This was during the height of the video music era, when MTV played music videos instead of reality shows. And this was in an era where film production standards and filmmaking were still of a high level across the board. You know, I'm not saying that the do-it-yourself revolution is a bad thing. I think it's good, but what you see what's happened to television, it's not what it was. You know, it's just handheld reality shows that have completely cut out all of the crafts, you know, all the skilled people who made films, you know, and TV production. So the quality of a lot of television has really slumped, and that's because people they don't want to pay. They want to just throw something on the air and make more, have a bigger profit margin, basically. It's been an attack on people in the industry, and so you have to keep finding new things to avenues to express your art. And what I've stumbled on is a channel where at the moment, you know, the business model eventually will be that I will be producing my own content because I'll have the wherewithal to do that. And it is becoming quite profitable right now. This month was the most profitable. I almost doubled my income from the previous month. I haven't even been broadcasting for a year yet. And I get 105,000 unique visitors in the United States per month, and some 155 globally. And I guess that what I'm doing is that I'm finding the thing that I think, I try to nail what is vital, what's vital and what is important and what do we need to think about right now. and it seems to resonate with a lot of people, you know, because that's really what I'm looking for. And it can be an array of subject matters. I try to stay in science mostly because that's my, just my passion. I love science. But I do go into spiritual and political areas. The site is called Forbidden Knowledge TV because sometimes I deal with information that has been classified by the government at some time. Sometimes the information is would be like career suicide for a scientist to discuss in a mainstream academic setting. So in this sense, the information that I deal with is forbidden. A lot of the information I deal with are medical cures that are suppressed and alternative energies technologies that are suppressed by the petroleum cartels and by the pharmaceutical cartels. So it's vital. The stuff that I deal with is vital. That's what really drives me, and it can be in any number of areas of subject matter. I've done some very fun work with a woman who was doing a pyramid conference in Houston last February. And it was with that Sam Osmanagic, I think he's Bosnian, and he is the discoverer of a pyramid complex in the Balkans. And he's even proven with Curlian photography, a British gentleman who has the equipment to measure subtle electromagnetic radiation that comes off of these pyramids that are clearly of a very different pattern than a natural mountain formation. You know, they are definitely displaying the characteristics of pyramids. And then I did a whole week of pyramids all over the world, and it was fascinating. There's pyramids all over the Midwest of the United States. There are pyramids in China, off the shore of Ryukyu, you know, near Okinawa, southern islands that are now part of Japanese territory. And what was very interesting is that the word pyramid itself raises so many red flags to the spam filters of all the internet service providers that many times an email with pyramid, the word pyramid in the subject line, will bounce and not arrive to the recipient. So that's something I just looked at today because I played this past month about the Okinawan pyramids that are underwater. And what that is saying is that these pyramids were built at a time before the end of the last ice age and before global sea levels rose some 300 or 400 feet all over the world. And so we're talking about the construction of this thing has to be about 12,000 plus years ago to have been, you know, above the water back then, you know, for it to be constructed. And when you look at the structures, they really are very reminiscent of things that you'll find in Peru, the type of construction of the megaliths in, you know, Machu Picchu and Cusco and throughout Peru, which is a fascinating place that I've been lucky enough to travel to twice. So that's it. That's what I do. I feel like I'm talking too much and that you need to talk now.
No, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and you know, the Bosnia pyramid, we have our friend that's in Kuwait named Dawn, and she went to the Bosnia pyramid just recently and spent a couple of weeks, and she's going back again to do more research. So she's going to be giving us a detailed report. She's writing a journal, and she'll have a report for us about that pyramid. So I'm really glad that you mentioned that. And so I want to do a shout out to Dawn, who's in Kuwait.
Yeah,
anyway,
Dawn,
is there anything else
read.
That you would like to tell us? Maybe how about the Norway lights and the things that you have found with these, you know, pulses and electromagnetic energies and HARP? Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, you know, what I find is that the internet is such a free place that everything is out there, and it almost, everybody is safe, too. Everyone is made safe by that, is that there's so much information out there that it almost doesn't matter what you say. You know, you're not endangering yourself by being a truth teller, because there's so many lies out there to you know, there's a noise to sound ratio going on. And I think you were discussing discernment right before I came on the show, and that's what the internet really demands from us, is discernment, because there's so many agendas out there, and I think that it's not intentional that people are passing bad information. You know, I don't think that they're malignant in their intent to pass along information that's disinformational and not correct or not the truth. I think that they're seeking for the truth, and then they get misled. And I think a case of that, and I'm sticking with this. The Comet Elenin urban legend that has just seized the American imagination right now, I think it's a psychological operation. And I think that the main thing that we are at risk of having crater into planet Earth between September and November of 2011 is the economy and the global financial system, not a small and unspectacular comet. It poses no risk to us whatsoever. Hale Bopp was like 40 times the size of this thing.
Yeah, okay. We had someone on our show that talked about the alignment. And so, you know, there's so many different, you're right, so many different things are on the internet. You have to have discernment about what's important to you, what's real. In fact, in my sessions now, there's two things that I tell my clients: what's real and what's the most important thing to you at this time. And if you can focus on those two things, I think you're pretty all right. You know, those commercials years ago, is it real or is it Memorex? You know, because we're living in a Memorex time where things are artificial and you don't know what's real and what's illusionary. So I happen to agree with that. Is there anything on the horizon that you've seen recently about new cancer cures?
Well, definitely the Brzezinski story, Dr. Brzezinski in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
I played his movie, and I recommend it. Go look, search my site for Brzezinski. It's spelled Brzezinski. It's the name of the movie. And the full-length movie has been made available. It's brand new. It was just released 3 months ago or less. It's being made available by the filmmakers instead of profiting from it normally, because at this point in its age, you know, this is you make money if you're a filmmaker in the first year of the film's release, and then it's progressively less money. So that's why I'm able to play five-year-old movies, because at this point those filmmakers are happy to have their films resurrected and awareness, you know, be directed towards their work. But in the first year you have to respect them and let them make their money, because they did work hard to make this thing. So, but in the case of Brzezinski, which is brand new, they're making it available because he has been under siege by the state and federal government for 20 years. And they keep on trying to sue him, and they keep on losing. I think he's been sued by the FDA twice, but finally they were like, okay, you know, there's nothing illegal about what you're doing. And he even got into phase two trials for his treatment, which really is the most effective in brain cancers. And it's derived from human urine, so there's kind of like that awkward thing about that. But this is hardly new as far as medicine goes. I mean, any woman on hormone replacement therapy knows that that hormone replacement comes from horse urine. You know, but this is human, and it basically what's found in the urine of human beings that are not cancer prone is something that he calls anti-neoplastins. Neoplastins is another word for cancer cells. And what he finds is that people who have cancer, they have something present in the urine that is a marker that they have cancer, and that people who don't get cancer or don't have a tendency for cancer have something in their urine that, he can distill out of the urine and make a treatment that will reverse cancer within 3 months in many cases. People with large tumors in their brain, the tumors are gone very rapidly from taking this distilled, you know, anti-neoplastin. And he did get to phase two clinical trials, which I believe means that you're allowed to treat people who are terminal, you know, cases. And when you're dealing with brain cancer, that's what you're dealing with. Oftentimes, if it's past a certain point, it's going to be terminal. And many times, if they've already been taking chemo and really wrecking their health with that stuff, you know, they're closer to terminal than if they just had the cancer, you know. So he continued to treat patients that weren't maybe in the trials, and then Texas came after him again, like a couple of weeks ago, which is an abomination because he has saved, and what when he goes to trial, he gets 50 people to testify that this man saved my life. You know, he completely reversed my child's cancer in a matter of months. I have a life now. I would have been dead without this. This man is, you know, he's doing the right thing by treating me and healing me, helping me heal. And so that's why he always wins his cases, because he has an army of people whose lives that he's saved. So I highly recommend taking a look at Burzynski, the film, Burzynski. It's just amazing as a story of one man who's principled, and how really vile the government is being, because they're corrupt. They're corrupted by the big drug companies into not really doing their jobs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, thank you for reminding our audience where to go to see that wonderful film. I'd like to switch our conversation a little bit to, you said that earlier that you had seen UFOs during your life, and that you had met John Mack, and that you had, you know, been on the skirts of investigating some things. Would you tell us a little bit about that? I'm sure the audience would love to hear it.
Sure. Actually, my first UFO experience, I think I was 13, was, I think, what the seminal moment of my life in many ways, because what it demonstrated for me was that, you know, in just a flash of observing this thing, and actually this sighting lasted for about an hour, and it came down from the edge of the atmosphere directly over our heads, and it absolutely felt like it was that it was reading our minds, you know, that it was aware that we were there looking at it. It was absolutely, it seemed to be responsive to our consciousness. And just right there, just that whole experience of seeing something silent, but looking, you know, like Skylab or, you know, some kind of a space station, didn't look like an alien thing at all. I was in Brazil at the time. It was São Paulo, a huge city, one of the biggest cities in the world, and which had maybe 10 million people back then. It has more, like double that now. And to see something perform anti-gravity propulsion, to feel that telepathic connection to something very weird and unusual, it just shattered so many things. It really told me that the tapestry of lies that passes for reality in our civilization was shattered forever, because it showed me that the physics that they're teaching us in school is fake, and that the space program is fake, and just so many things on and on and on. I mean, for me to be able to see that happening, and then for it not to be front page news, which, I mean, to me, that deserves to be front page news, that you have this huge spaceship that comes from the edge of the atmosphere and then hovers maybe 1,500 feet over the ground. If that's not front page news or worth putting your news TV news camera on, then I don't know what is, you know? So that it just was like, wow, you know, this is the whole planet is living a lie here.
Well, you know, we had Richard Dolan on, who has written a book called AD, After Disclosure. And
I know him. He's great.
Yeah, and I have just really promoted his book as much as possible, because when I read the contents on Thanksgiving Day, just the contents, I just had to take a nap, because I knew that every chapter that he had written, it was coded in such a way as to let me know that disclosure was about to happen. Now, whether or not our government actually comes out and says it makes no difference to me, because the reality of what's happening all over the world, and is with many video cameras and things. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, disclosure is happening now. It's happening now everywhere. And that I'm very excited that I'm living in a time of this. And a lot of my clients will say, well, I don't know why I'm here. And I'll say, well, I'll tell you, for one reason you might be here is the greatest events in the world is going to be taking place, I think, within the next couple of years, and you're going to be alive to see it and participate in it. And that's what I tell them.
Yeah. I have a positive feeling about things. There's a lot of people out there who really think that the Earth is going to have Earth crust displacement in a few months and all stuff because of a brown dwarf. And it's like, it's sad. It's saying a few things to me. One, it's an utter failure of the public education system completely, that people don't know the difference between a cometary orbit and a binary brown dwarf orbit, and how if we have a brown dwarf, which is possible and they're looking for it, it wouldn't come into the inner solar system. That's not how these orbits work. They orbit around each other. It would stay out there. And especially since we haven't seen it, I mean, it's something that is far. So, and then the second thing is that's really saying, and it speaks to other things that I've said already, is that people do not trust the authorities. They don't trust what anybody says, and it's like you are also saying, there's just so much disinformation, and especially coming from the authorities, that people don't believe them, and then they'll start to believe pretty harebrained, crazy things. Now, these alignments and earthquakes that have happened to coincide with Comet Allison's trajectory also coincided with Sun-Jupiter alignments, you know, which that's historical and that's been going on forever. Jupiter's huge. It has the mass to affect the Earth's crust when it aligns with the massive Sun. Yes, yeah, Jupiter will do that, not a tiny comet.
Yeah, well, it just may be another piece to the puzzle. Who knows? You know, we only have to wait a few more days to find out if any of these predictions are actually, you know, real or not. So
right.
I'd like to change the subject a little bit now and go into our economic crisis. And, you know, I was you sent a video the other day. I think his name is Chek or Chink. From MSNBC, he got fired
because
he put a program together about, you know, why hasn't someone gone to jail on Wall Street?
Well, he does it all the time. And I think maybe the thing that finally got him is that he was supportive of the hacktivist group Anonymous and LulzSec also.
Say that
you
again.
You know, he was, have you heard of the hacktivist groups?
Who are they?
They're really children, like they're teenagers and in their 20s, and they're hackers, and they're hacktivists, and 16 of them were arrested by the FBI in a 10-state sweep, and they're looking at 20 years in jail.
Oh, goodness.
For taking down certain websites in retaliation for the jailing of Julian Assange, who is the creator of WikiLeaks, which the intention of that site, the stated intention, was to create a safe haven for whistleblowers of governments all over the world to anonymously leak cases of corruption and bad governance and malfeasance. And so these kids are, I don't know how closely affiliated, but definitely in spirit they are. And when, because Julian Assange lives on donations largely, and people were trying to make PayPal and credit card donations to him, and the U.S. government told them, disallowed them. You're not allowed because he's wanted by the government and whatever. And even though he's Australian, and actually I don't think that they can really get him on anything because he's not a U.S. citizen, and all the things that they want to get him on only apply to U.S. citizens.
So you think Cenk, that he was fired because he had an association with that group?
Well, he promoted them. He did many segments, not only on criminality of Wall Street, but also on, wow, these guys, you know, it's a little scary, but they'll hit you in the pocketbook if they think that you're unethical. And what they did is that they crashed, and I remember back at the time this was happening, I think it was in November or December of last year, I couldn't, my PayPal didn't work. I couldn't make transactions. My bank wasn't, Bank of America was not working. I was trying to make Visa payments, couldn't do it because these guys had crashed all of these major financial websites, and that was their punishment for what was happening to Julian Assange. And Cenk Uygur thought that that was just, you know, he thought this was great. He's saying, you know, we're waiting for the knight in shining armor, and there is none. But the good news is that you're it. You're the knight in shining armor. You can get off the couch and do something, you know, and be active and become an activist and make the world be the way you want it to be instead of sitting around and watching TV and complaining about it. Do something. So that was pretty, you know, that's not a mainstream news anchor sort of. It's not the kind of stuff they want those guys saying. So that was pretty recent, and he's been going on and on and on about Wall Street for a couple of years now.
Is he going to get another show somewhere else? Do you know where he's going now?
Well, he's always had his own independent channel on the internet anyway, so that, and it's by subscription. It's a different deal. I'm sure he makes a lot more money than I do because it's a subscription-based. My service is free. And, yeah, so that's going to keep going. And maybe like Keith Olbermann and other people, you know, Glenn Beck or other, you know, big, even bigger news anchors who have been fired lately and are doing their own thing. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with because, and I think that to a large part, I think it was voluntary as well by all of them because their principles and their truth was being violated by the lies that they had to tell for their job.
Right. Let me ask you, Alexandra, do you have a team that works with you or do you do all this by yourself? How do people find you to say, put my video up on your website? What's the procedure?
If you go to my website, which is forbiddenknowledgetv.com, you can go into the About tab, like on top. It's actually about to change. It's about to be upgraded. My home page is very simple right now. But I'm very easy to email and contact. If you subscribe to my newsletter, you see what I'm playing. I'm very, very open and happy to look at suggestions. I think that almost 50% of my content has been supplied to me by my own subscribers. They're like, hey, this is important. Play this. So that's how, you know, it helps me because it's work to find something that's worth, that really is, like, vital and worth watching, you know. So that's really what I try to do. And sometimes I play something that's more of a release, but still beautiful. I played something about a humpback whale who had been trapped in fishing lines, and a marine biologist it's like a 15-minute long video. It shows him freeing her. And afterwards, she gave a display of jumping, you know, breaching out of the water and flapping her tail for an hour. Just the palpable joy of this beautiful animal is so present in this video. And so I play things like that. It's not all about, oh, they've got problems, things are bad. It's also stuff that's uplifting because, you know, you need to balance the bad news with the good news.
Right, so, right. Let me ask you, Alexander, we have someone that's going to come on here, I believe, for about 5 minutes. Can you hang on with us so that some of our listeners can ask you some questions? Can you hang on with us for a little while?
Sure.
Okay. So, Ariel, back to you. Is Renee Barnett, is she on the line?
I don't see her yet. We do have Michael Monk is on the switchboard, and he's going to be talking a little bit as well. But, Michael, we don't want to quite start with you yet because we'll have to interrupt you when Renee calls in. And I don't see her number yet, so I know she's busy on the set of a film production, and we'll be breaking away as close to now as she can.
Well, what we might do is if you keep looking for her number, and maybe you can open up someone on the chat room or on the telephone line to talk to Alexander and ask a question until Renee comes in. I know that Renee's been working on conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura, and I really applaud her for that. So you just keep us informed, and we'll just move right along and see if someone wants to ask her a question.
Yes, why don't you tell me about my chart, which I don't understand at all.
Oh, I'm not about to do that on the air.
Oh, okay.
Actually, if I can step in here, this is Sierra Alexandria, and I am a huge fan of yours. I actually receive Forbidden Knowledge TV, and I spread it around to all
Great.
Of my friends. And
Thank
every
you.
Single time, in fact, I've actually got myself signed up twice so that I received double the videos that you send out. I have an entire folder in my Yahoo account that I put all of it into, and I'm constantly forwarding them so that it just gets out there as quick as possible. And so
Thank
I
you.
Really, truly, truly appreciate the effort that you're putting into this. I sent several cancer videos of the man that cures cancer over to a friend whose mom's dying in Florida who's tried everything and she's been kicked out of all these other programs. I mean,
mm-hmm.
just everything. Every time that you put something out, I'm forwarding it to people. So I truly, truly applaud you for the effort that you're doing. It's very, very valuable.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your appreciation. I appreciate the. I mean, I hope I'm helping. That's the idea, you know.
I believe that you are, and we do have a question actually for you from the chat room. One of our listeners wanted to know if you knew about the group Anonymous. Do you know
yeah,
about them?
That's who I was talking about before that
okay.
Cenk Uygur,
okay.
yes, that he was supporting on MSNBC, and I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back for him.
Okay, and then do you think that they're a legit group, and what are your thoughts on them?
Well, I think I spoke to a journalist last night about them who was really heavily investigating them and had actually spoken to the spokesman of the group, a related group called Lulsec. He was a guy who was found in the Shetland Islands of Scotland, turns out, and also very young, you know, 19 or 20 years old. And he says that they've probably, you know, there have been so many arrests made that they may now be stopped. Many arrests in Europe, and really, one was only 16 years old, like the head of the whole thing was a 16-year-old boy in London. And then this other guy was 19 or 20, who was the spokesperson who would speak on behalf of the group. And my friend, my journalist friend in Washington, interviewed him a few weeks ago. But then he was arrested, I think, earlier this week. And as I said, 16 American members of Anonymous were arrested by the FBI in the middle of, 2 weeks ago. So I think that they may be dead in the water. I hope they come back. You know, maybe there'll be others who have their skills and who have their beliefs, because they were not, they didn't know each other personally. They were driven by a common belief that unethical and oppressive actions were going on all over the world, and on behalf of us, on behalf of, you know, we the people, our governments are perpetrating things that don't represent us, and that's what the government's supposed to do, is a representative government. So,
have you, Alexandria, have you heard, or did I actually see that video, because you sent it out, about November.org, where they are, the people on, maybe it was YouTube or something, people are actually calling for an occupation of Washington starting in November?
That, they might be related. I didn't, what I heard was something sooner, like maybe a warm-up for people to organize, and but peacefully, and on a certain date, and now I'm forgetting what it was. There are many splinters, and it's really, it's not like an organized situation. It's a lot of young people, and sort of, you know, even in their message, sometimes it's, you can see the immaturity of the person who wrote that, the kinds of things, you know, expect us, you know, is one of their...
this was a video that was done really well by a bunch of middle-aged people, and they have a list of it after. I'll send it to you. I'll forward it to you.
Yeah,
maybe you can
please,
put it on Forbidden Knowledge, and we'll go ahead and circulate it widely. But it was just a really well-done video of a call for a peaceful occupation of Washington starting in October and November again. And I'd like to get that available for our listeners, too. And that's what we need to do, is the whole idea is peaceful. And what they were talking about to bring to the table is that they will continue to occupy Washington until the legislators divert the money away from the trillions of dollars, away from the war machine that we have, and start putting it back into our economy, back into the people, back into the little people. So
I'm for that. I am 100% for that.
Because
so
we can't do anything differently if we incite riots. It's just going to be the same thing over and over and over again. The key is peaceful.
Absolutely. You know, and not hacking and not bringing down businesses' websites. You know, that's. I mean, it's funny, but in a way, it's not funny for the business.
We want to leave the little people alone. We don't want to mess with, you know, the people that are struggling to be in business and the people that are, you know, different things like that. So,
absolutely not. Great. I look forward to seeing this, and I will play it.
Perfect. I appreciate that. So that's the only questions I had from the chat room at this time.
That's the real news. I mean, in another major story, which we really, the tip of the iceberg, it hasn't really come out yet, and it's because of the curious situation where Murdoch owns such a huge percentage of the media and seems to have blackmailed all or most of Congress, you know, and Parliament in the UK, that it's just not coming out the way it should. That... You know, I think people have been paranoid about their governments, wiretapping them and whatever. And then you realize that maybe they were doing things legally by having an arm's length operation where it wasn't the government directly necessarily. It was like it was through private investigators working for newspapers and news agencies that people's phones got hacked. Remember when all the stuff with Princess Di and Charles, all these like phone calls became public? That's phone hacking, and it's been going on for a long time, and somehow these people don't get prosecuted to do that. That's illegal to do that. And then it becomes front page news, and people sell millions of newspapers because of it, and it's a crime. So it's finally being addressed, and what it exposed is that it's like Murdoch has controlled British Parliament for some 20 years by blackmailing every member, by either paying them or getting some stuff on them and blackmailing them.
And I appreciate that you're bringing all this to light, but I do want to just reassure listeners, too, is that it's good to be educated about what's going on out there so the proper effective steps can be taken. Violence is not one of those steps, but to actually engage your politicians and the people, and also not to get so overwhelmed to where you sit down and you feel like, I can't do anything. You know, you sure can. We are billions, billions, and they are hundreds, okay? So peaceful things can be done. Peaceful negotiations can be entered into. And so we as a people just need to figure out the way to get their attention. You know, there was a man who stopped eating. He was a very, very famous guru, and you all know who I'm talking about. And he got he forced his whole country to stop and pay attention to what was going on.
Could you say more about that?
So there are ways to get attention of our politicians and things like that. Having a voice and actually stepping forward and engaging people is the thing to do. And if we sit back and think that other people will take care of these things for us, then we aren't going to see any positive change affected. But if we pick up the phone and we call our senators and we go and we visit them or we ask them to, we get involved and we use, say, we educate ourselves by the information that you give out, and instead of just, you know, poo-poo it and say, it's always been that way, it's always going to continue to be that way, we can affect positive change in our world. We just need to get become educated and then take action on that education. And so, you know, I'm constantly urging people, our listeners, to get involved in their communities, get involved in their churches, get involved in their spiritual groups, and start demanding that things be done differently. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we are billions of people, and they are thousands, hundreds to just a couple thousand of people who actually supposedly run, you know, our government. So we could really, you know, if we unite together and it's an organized thing, we can get the attention of our governments very easily. One way to do that is just to stop playing the game. I promise you, if everybody in one state or something like that decided they weren't going to buy fuel or gasoline for one day and it was actually organized and orchestrated and it came out and actually people did it that way, that would get the attention of the government really quick. So I'm really, really happy to see that these grassroots things are starting to happen where, you know, a call for peaceful organization, occupation of Washington could literally trigger an occupation of every state government or capital around the United States. All we'd have to do is stand there, and we would have the attention of the government right now.
Yeah, I'm for that, definitely, and I promote it as much as I can.
Well, I am still looking for Renee's number, and she must have been detained. And I don't want to. I want to move forward here. And Alexandra, if you would please stay with us, we're going to hear from Michael Monk, and then we will come back and have more questions for Alexandra Bruce from our other callers and in the chat room. Does that sound okay?
Yes. Great.
Okay. Great. So I am going to put you back on hold. You'll still be able to hear the show, Alexandra. But we're going to introduce now Mr. Michael Monk. Hello, Michael. Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy.
Thank you so much.
Well, I have talked to several people that in our community. And as far as away as Idaho, and they know about your work. So, but there are probably listeners that haven't heard about what you do. And I know I saw the video that you have on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
How can people? Can you give us that link or just tell us how to search YouTube to see?
Oh,
it?
Sure. Well, I've actually got my website up now, so. You can go to avatarenergymaster.com, and I have a link there called Supernatural Demonstrations, where I have all my videos posted and some other pictures of some of my brothers doing some other things as well.
Oh, well, that's great. That's very convenient. So avatarenergymaster.com?
That's right.
.com? Master singular,
yes.
Not plural?
Yes, singular.
Okay. Avatarenergymaster.com. So, Michael, would you just tell us a little bit about what you do, what you have discovered can be done not only by you but by other people?
Sure thing. Basically, what I do or what I started doing was channeling energy the way channelers do to get information or talk to guides and such, except instead of digging into the information, I just took the vibrations into myself and made the energies my own. So instead of canceling out my consciousness and going into a trance to deliver information from another being, I stayed awake and focused as I went to these states so that the energies were a part of my waking consciousness so I could use them here. Eventually, what I ended up discovering is that we all have light coming out of us, out of our center, so to speak. You have to really experience it to understand it, but people who can make it to the theta brainwave of consciousness while still awake with their eyes open will perceive the universal energy field as well as all of the light that comes out of their center as well. And when you're tuned to that, your mind will naturally start to expand past your body as your repeated exposure to this kind of energy will cause your nerve fibers to grow to a greater enough size to where your mind can actually sense the field. And once you do that, it's really a simple process to come outside of your body, which I call expanding. So it's like having an out-of-body experience while staying in your body. You expand your awareness, and you become one with anything that surrounds you. You'll feel it as an extension of yourself, be it water, air, fire, another person, a tree, or an animal, I mean, anything. And once your mind is expanded past, you just automatically become telekinetic. It happened to me accidentally. I was just doing my meditations near a river one day and noticed how beautiful the water was, and I let my hands down and opened my heart, and I noticed that the water was rippling away from my hands, which was really curious. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I saw that in your videos, and for those who haven't seen it yet, Michael puts his hands in this still water, and then you hold still for a little bit and let the water go back to still from having inserted your hands, and then you just start pushing this energy, expanding, as you're saying, and holding perfectly still, you can see the water rippling out, you know, concentric circles from your hands. And mm-hmm. and it goes right in rhythm with your breath, so you know that it's not fake. You can hear you breathing, so you really need to go on Michael's website to see these video links, because it is an amazing demonstration of energy mastery, which is what you teach. Correct?
Sure. And I wish to state at this point that the external power, the telekinesis or summoning energy that's even visible, such as fire or electricity, or any of these extreme abilities, they're not the true fruit of connecting like this. The true fruit is what you feel inside, being connected to your exterior world. It's a whole way of experiencing the third dimension that that we just simply haven't tapped into yet. It's a whole range of experiencing our everyday reality in a completely different fashion. There's really no part of the human experience that does not get heightened when your energies are expanded past your body and you have enough love or empathy to actually connect with everything around you. One of the things I like to describe is I can touch a tree and expand my consciousness into the tree, and I'll feel the leaves at the top, I'll feel the sunshine hitting them, I'll feel the water coming up the roots as though it's just an extension of my own self. Another example I like to use is with people. When I do energy and healing with people, I'm inside of their body. I feel their body and my body as though they're both my body, or rather I should say our body, because we both feel the same thing. And once a connection is made, you can just use mental imagination and energy free flows with no force or effort whatsoever.
Wow. I just had this visual of a full body Vulcan mind meld. You know how Mr. Spock would meld with somebody and you know, our thoughts are one. This is like the whole next level of that, where it's like the full body Vulcan mind meld. And is it? I mean, it's really the forerunner of the energy that will be the status quo after, you know, the new age and the ascension is complete. Don't you think?
Right. This will complete the ascension when everybody works on their energy enough and everybody is expanded past their body, then we will all be overlapped. I would like to say that I've had many, many cases. It depends on the person that I'm working with. But when I overlap with them, sometimes I will audibly hear their thoughts.
Mm.
That's a mild form of telepathy. The higher form of telepathy we're going to move into is everybody thinking and feeling on the same wavelength. So communication is automatic, not back and forth dialogue. But the main thing I wanted to point out is when everybody's energy fields are expanded past their body, we will all be connected through the earth itself. Like when I stand on the ground, I can feel the earth beneath my feet, like many feet under the ground, as an extension of my body. And I'm connected to what you would call the inner collective consciousness of earth at that point. And if we all had that kind of connection, then we would be completely as one. And we would be able to replace physical labor with telekinesis and manifestation. With all of our energies overlap, we can do so much more. I mean, you've seen that just myself can move the water. I can do things with air, change weather patterns, all sorts of things. If we were all connected, there's no limit to what we could do.
I believe that. I truly believe that. And it's certainly, if everyone had that kind of connection with the earth, the polluting practices would end.
Oh, absolutely.
And if everyone had that ability for telepathic understanding, we could get rid of the electromagnetic radiation from cell phones.
Exactly.
You know?
And, you know, we've all heard the philosophies about unity. We've heard that we're all one. We've heard that we're all connected. But we're in a reality of separation, which reality is that we're perceiving that our brains are our only mind to think with and that our bodies are the only body we can inhabit. When unity becomes experiential, instead of a theory, it changes the whole nature of the game. Treating each other well and coming from the heart becomes a natural act instead of something that's at variance with what you know to be true, which is that you are a separate and individual creature. So as you learn to expand like this, you maintain your selfhood, you maintain your individuality, but you are also connected to the whole or anything that you encounter in your exterior environment.
And I understand that for a limited time, you are doing work with people over the phone.
Yes.
Did I see that on your site?
Yes. My primary job is to teach teachers that are going to teach students and, you know, so on, and everybody becomes a teacher eventually. But for a time, until it all gets rolling, I will definitely be available for private help.
Great.
And I'd like to say that this stuff is easy. It's not hard. There's ancient societies that are currently still around that know everything that I do, but they have an inner circle. Like you take O's, you go through a system. It takes years. And I took no O's. You know, I learned all of this through spirit and meditation. So the techniques that I have that lead you to this kind of consciousness can be achieved in 3 weeks to 3 months, depending on your dedication.
Wow. Well, that's
could
really
we have the? I'm sorry. Could we have the website one more time?
Yes, it's avatarenergymaster.com.
And I will venture to say that I did a reading for Michael just this last week, and his starseed markings are just off the charts, and certainly he has brought back a lot of the Atlantean ideals, and his starseed markings fully support his abilities to do this, and it's more of a, you just remembered what you have known for eons. It's
right.
Not something that you just learned from scratch. And thank you so much for bringing this knowledge back at a time when people are really, I think, ready for it and certainly need it.
Well, thank you very much for thanking me. I've actually had to put up with a lot, you know, my family thinking I'm crazy, losing my friends, and because I devoted 3 years to this, every spare moment spent in meditation by myself, and it's been really tough, and until I had enough external demonstrable abilities, everybody was going to think I'm crazy. But I knew what I was experiencing, and I knew deep inside what was possible if I continue to research this.
Well, we are so glad that you did, and I know that our audience totally understands, and this is a real safe forum for you, because we're right there with you and totally believe and support what you're doing.
Awesome.
So,
I would like to speak briefly about the crystal children, because that is really where we're heading. The passage in Isaiah 3:4, "I will give you babes to be your princes, and children shall rule over you." That was a literal vision that he had of the future. It's our little ones that are going to lead us past all of this. Their spiritual DNA is totally cleansed, and they're not yet poisoned by our negative, limiting beliefs. Actually, with a typical crystal child, I can give them a full awakening in 5 minutes to 1 day. It just makes natural sense to them.
Uh-huh.
To quote an example, the child that I quote as that I spiritually adopted, Hannah, within 5 minutes, I was able to teach her to create an orb of light like you see in photos, and then I was able to teach her how to put her mind inside of it. And within just 5 minutes, she could pop out of her body, go into this orb, and from there, go anywhere in the 3D world, as well as go into me and, using my chakras, access higher planes. And then I taught her how to merge with her mother and share dreams with her. And so they're sharing dreams now. And so I think if you have a crystal child, awakening with them, I would say, would be the most sacred way of experiencing this, in a bond of love with your child as your guide. And they are more than ready for this, and they're protected by an endless host from the angelic realm. So they're the ones to be watching for.
Yes, and they're certainly... they're certainly the ones that we are all here for, as starseed parents and mentors, and we've
right.
had a lot of hours on this show on that topic exactly with many people who are doing leading edge work with all the various types of starseed crystal children, indigo children, and there's all different kinds of labels for them, but it's all the same thing. These are the advanced ones that are here to step up into a higher realm of consciousness and do the healing work that needs to be done, not only on the planet, but on our civilization.
Right, right. Yeah, and I would like to say I'm really in touch with the Mother Earth, and I would like to tell everybody that she's in no pain. If you felt what she felt, you would just, I mean, I'm feeling it right now, and it's hard to talk. It's so beautiful. Her only pain is that we don't see, that we don't understand. So the healing of the Earth grid is really the healing of the human collective consciousness. Uh-huh. The animals, the plants, everything, they don't feel things the way we do. So it's us that they feel sorry for.
Well, I have a quick question from the chat room, if that's okay.
Sure, of course.
One of our listeners wanted to know, you know, the indigo adults that are out there.
Yes.
Are they too going to be transitioning into, like, crystal children? I mean, what's your view on that, about indigo to crystal? Is there some sort of crossover? Do we all become a crystalline type?
Yes, absolutely. The whole purpose of the indigos, and I'm one of them, was to bridge to the crystals, to be able to understand them enough and to be disassociated from the ones who came before us enough to where we could transcend all of these limiting beliefs. Really, it all comes down to belief. Once you start maintaining the basic belief that you're limitless, that's the main thing that will set you free. As far as what types of levels of consciousness we can all go to in 2012, the gates are open for all of it. It depends on you. How much effort do you put in? How much do you expand your awareness, your consciousness, your I am presence? We all have the opportunity to go all the way to Christ consciousness, even God consciousness. I would say the bulk of humanity is going to choose a 4D or 5D level of reality. It's really a lot to handle, mentally speaking, when you go into planes beyond that. But basically, it's wide open for whatever you feel that you wish to achieve. There's no universal clock that says that you can't even elevate straight from 3D all the way to God consciousness, even if this was your first life. There's no limits.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, Michael. Lavendar, still do not see Renee, so something has occurred. Like I said, Mercury's going retrograde, and it's been coming on all week. So this is not surprising. But, Michael, I do want to thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening, and I do encourage everyone to check out Michael's work because it is really phenomenal. It's leading edge. It's what is where we all are going to end up sooner or later. As Lavendar says, you can come now or come later, but you are coming.
Sure. If I could say one last thing,
sure.
I've been contracted for scientific research. So within 6 months, there's going to be an academic paper published on all of this stuff. So it's going to come to the science community. And it's interesting that you brought up the Atlantis stuff, because when science understands spiritual technology, we're going to be crossing into some danger zones. And there's going to have to be, you know, wise use of it. But that's all
right.
I have to say for now.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Michael. It has been a pleasure hearing what you have to say. And we invite you to come back at some point in the future and keep us posted on what you're doing and the progress of that paper and the research and all. So, everyone, thank you so much. This has been Michael Monk, and AvatarEnergyMaster.com is his website.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye-bye
Michael.
Now.
Bye-bye. Well, Lavendar, we do not have Renee with us, and I keep checking. I do know that the tour in France is going to be from October 2nd until the 8th, and this is a tour that has been the result of many requests from our Starseed audience because of her work on Bloodline, the movie, and the discoveries in René Le Château in France, and she is taking a group there October 2nd through the 8th, and you can contact Renee at bloodlinethemovie.com. Look for the contact information. And if you can't get a hold of her, you can also email one of us, and we'll hook you up. So in lieu of Renee making that, she may yet make it, but just in case, I figured I'd say it for her. I know she's got more details to announce, but that's as much as I know right now. We're going to get back to Alexandra Bruce right now from Forbidden Knowledge TV. Alexandra, welcome back.
Hello.
Hello.
So that was beautiful. I've loved his presentation. I really felt it, and I'm going to go to his website. I'm inspired to work on that. So I'm really glad that I was here to hear that.
I had that thought,
and I listened, and I was like, "This is wonderful." So thank you.
Yeah. Well, I had that thought just before I brought Michael on that. Because he does have videos of doing what he's doing, and his message is so positive and absolutely pure loving energy that it would be possibly a good connection for the two of you. With the videos.
I really do think it's important to also have uplifting and empowering information, not just the stuff that's like, oh my God, they've really. You know, they rigged the elections with computers, you know. There's the programmer who did it and can testify to it, you know. There's a lot of jaw-dropping information that I share, but that's kind of, could maybe lead. I don't think that one should be driven toward spirituality out of aversion, you know, out of the aversion of the horribleness of things, you know, the way things are. I think that you should go there as an attract, you know, be attracted to the goodness and the love. That's the attitude, I think. Out of, you know, running away from darkness, but actually moving towards the light in a powerful way. And that's where I really get from what he's doing, and I appreciate that.
In Labrador here, you know what I thought of? I thought of Nancy Wallace in New Mexico and the Wake Up Now conference and how she's putting monies together to build this school for children, these new children. And I was thinking about what he was saying about working with those indigo children. I thought, he's got to find Nancy Wallace. That's where my mind went.
I had that thought too. Well, I will be in contact with Michael and you know, give him all these connections that we've made, because he's just so much doing the work that needs to be done. I mean, it's precious, precious work that he's doing. And yes, I mean, Alexandra, I think it's really good to have the some balance, because there is so much. I mean, there's probably more a propensity and more prevalence of things that are wrong in the world. And it's nice that we can have a breath of fresh air, and I know that you have a lot of great uplifting things as well. So it's a good service, because we have to be aware of what's wrong without being fearful, and then make the choice of like you said, seeing how beautiful this other choice is and wanting to be part of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So what about the alternative energy topics that you have?
Well, with the most popular one, I'm just looking at the site log of the past, you know, since I started broadcasting in earnest last October, I see that this gentleman by the name of Dan Nocera, and that's N-O-C-E-R-A, and he is a professor at MIT, and he has found a way to separate oxygen from hydrogen in water. And it can be dirty water, so it doesn't have to be pure or, you know, compete with our water supply that we need to drink. It can be seawater. It can be wastewater even. And he's found a way to separate these two things so that every household could have its own energy supply to power their vehicles, to power the electricity in their homes, on a per use, you know, an as needed basis, so that, because having a lot of hydrogen around, you know, you imagine the Hindenburg. I mean, that's kind of like where people go when they think of hydrogen, and that's why they don't use hydrogen anymore. So, you know, it has to be done on an as needed basis, but, you know, and stored in small amounts. And the incredible security that this would offer to not only individuals, but entire nations, if they were not reliant on a major electric grid for their energy. You know, that's a big topic that's out there, you know, that maybe the sun will knock out all of our communication satellites and all the satellites, and how reliant our civilization has become on electrification, electric grids that, you know, we don't produce. It's centralized somewhere. There's talk of, like, a weapon that's being invented by Koreans or somebody that's an electronic, electromagnetic pulse weapon that would wipe out our electric grids. And so we are really exposed by being reliant on these systems when we could have our own personalized energy, and that's what his whole thing is about. And it's fascinating, and it's based on cobalt, and he's found a way to separate to crack water. It's called cracking water, and we've been able to do it using platinum, and I think NASA uses, they're called peroxide. They make it sound like it's nothing, but it's actually very important, and it of course is not in the marketplace because it would compete with the oil cartel's grip on the energy industry, you know, the fossil fuel business.
Right.
But it just has to phase out. I mean, you know, this is not a good way to live, to have to go fight illegal wars and kill innocent people so that we can get a lock on oil pipelines and oil supplies. When we even have the stuff here, I mean, what is it really about? Is it just about the war business being profitable? I don't think the war business should be a for-profit industry. That would, I think, stop, you know, the war business.
Of course. We haven't. I don't see any profits that we've made. As a matter of fact, it's just run the deficit up, you know, into the outer atmosphere. So yeah. I don't see the evident profit from war, and that would be great to have everyone independently having an unlimited supply of free energy.
Right, and solar, now solar circuits are so much more advanced in the last couple of years than ever. And there's a video that I have. It's called Solar Roadways, and it's a guy who developed basically it's a kind of very resistant glass. You know, it's a different kind of glass than regular glass, obviously, and that's what covers the solar panels, which because asphalt is made from petroleum products, and it's becoming too expensive, actually, to pave roads with asphalt.
Right. I've seen that because
of oil prices. So, yeah, I played that a couple of weeks ago, and that people loved it. And this literally, the roads go right to your house, and they're the electric grid, and they deliver. So I think any and all options should be explored, and may the best man win, you know, because the fossil fuel thing, it's got to be phased out. It's just not helping. It's not helping.
Right.
I mean, we can't stop it in one day. Obviously, our entire infrastructure is based on it, so it's something that has to be phased out. There's interesting stuff, sort of gross, but, you know, you got to do something with it. I haven't played it yet, but there is and it's happening all over the world slowly. But if you imagine having a plant next to every sewage treatment system for a large city, say, that is, after the wastewater is processed, the solids go in, and they're creating methane and hydrogen from that, which doesn't smell. It's not gross anymore because it's completely been neutralized by, you know, chemical processes. And it's supplying electricity for an entire neighborhood in Seattle, and also now in the UK they're doing that. I mean, why frack and crack and destroy aquifers in Pennsylvania when you can just get the same stuff, which is methane? That's what natural gas is. That's what they're fracking for. If you can just get it out of the sewage. You know, and they've made it so that it's actually a zero greenhouse gas emitting process. It's completely self-contained. It's very interesting. I'll play it soon. You know, it sort of grosses people out because it's sewage, but you got to do something with it. And here, it actually ends up being a very clean energy and a way to run, you know, power entire neighborhoods. You know, without the use of foreign oil and you know, war. You know, war-begotten products.
Right, right. Well, I saw that solar highway video, and I just sat with my mouth hanging open, going, oh, "This
it's
makes
so
much
great,
sense."
Isn't it?
I don't know, inspired.
Very inspiring.
You know, it's
very
like
people are brilliant, and like if we can be allowed to be brilliant. You know, things like this can happen instead of being beat down by the petroleum cartels into driving polluting vehicles and just knowing that every day almost everything that we do is bad because the whole system is bad, you know?
Right.
Right. Like you're participating in it and you're hating yourself because, oh, God, I'm driving a car here, you know, but I got to get from here to there. I mean, this is the way my life is. And you know, we could start replacing the energy sources. At least we won't feel, you know, just on a feel bad level, just to get rid of that part
right.
Would be good.
Lavendar, you remember what Dennis Weaver used to say? As soon as the big corporations find out that they can make a buck, they'll jump on the bandwagon because it's not because it's the right thing to do, but you know. These alternate energy sources can be profitable.
Absolutely.
And it's just a matter of time before.
Well, it's about replacing the infrastructure, and that's sort of like the hump, you know, that has to get.
Right.
But we're replacing it all the time. You know, we're always rebuilding and whatever, and one time it can just be the alternate thing. And I hope I get to see the day when these solar roadways are everywhere. I mean, if that was one of the most inspiring clips I've played in a long time. It was, you know, it's just showing ingenuity and just like, yes, that is a great solution to our problems right now.
Right. Yeah. It was so right on so many levels.
Yeah.
Well, are you ready to take a couple of questions?
Sure.
Okay, and Sierra, also get some, if you have questions in the chat room, get them ready because I'm coming to you next. We are going to talk to Joseph. Hello, Joseph, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Alexandra?
I do indeed. It's great to hear your voice. Alexandra, you and I have communicated several times. My name is Joseph Portal, and I have written to you, and you have answered so honestly and so openly, and I find your program is the first thing I go to. I get it, and it's the first thing I go to every day when I turn on my computer because it's always full of information and always inspiring. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I feel so profoundly connected with this program. Michael was one of my Reiki students. And it was at that time that he literally exploded with this information. And I, you know, he's one of my beloved ones. I'm so thrilled that he was on there today. What a surprise.
Wow. Small world.
Oh, yeah.
No,
it's all interconnected.
And
the other thing that was so interesting that you were talking about, Alexandria, about PayPal. I have had so much trouble with them, and that relates to Renee coming up because I still can't get my copy of Bloodline because PayPal dropped the ball. So It truly is interconnected. Every time I hear another thing, I'll go, oh, that's part of it. Yes, that's part of it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It's so, anyway. All one thing going on.
Yes.
Right.
Well, it is all one thing. It's just one continuum. And when you said something about that they were knocking things, and if they saw things with the word pyramid, that came to mind, because I just sent Lavendar a thing on a wonderful series called the Pyramid Code, which is extraordinary. I hope you got it, Lavendar, because I think you would enjoy interviewing that woman. What's her name?
Oh, Carmen, I saw the link. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't taken a look at it. I will, though. Yeah.
It is extraordinary. Just, she has really captured so much of Egypt that people never get to see.
Well,
so,
I did send an invite to her. I haven't heard back from her yet. I asked her to come and be on our show, but I haven't heard back from her. But I'm hoping that she will answer.
Well, you won't be disappointed. She's brilliant. She's a wonderful speaker. And I can just hardly wait to see what's coming up on Starseed Radio Academy. It's so much fun to be a part of that and to be have you all as a part of my life and to be a part of your life. We're truly so interconnected. So thank you so much for today's show. And again, Alexandra, your work is extraordinary. I wouldn't miss it every day. I agree with Sierra. It's one of my favorite things to watch.
Oh, thank you so much. It's just wonderful to get this feedback, you know, that doing something that's of value, you know. Thank you.
Oh, it's extraordinary. And you hear everybody else talking about, you know, that thing about the highways and the glass and what a brilliant concept. How would we have known about that if you hadn't put that on?
Right.
Thank you so much.
There's so much stuff, yeah, and everyone's got this time cannon. And, you know, somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to go, hey, check this out. This is great, you know.
I'm sure that our listeners are going to be contacting you, Alexandra, because they're out there and you know, doing the research and surfing the net, and I'm sure they're going to come up with stuff for you. So get ready. Joseph, thank you so much. You know, it's always a joy to have you on with us, and I'm glad that you have so much, you know, you have a connection to each one of our speakers tonight. So, wow.
Amazing.
It was amazing, and thank you all so much for all your time and effort, because I know
so
this
welcome.
Didn't just happen.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joseph. Bye-bye.
Thank all of you. Bye now.
Well, We something must have happened to Renee's maybe, you know, work on the production. She couldn't break away. So we will have her to come on next week with her announcement, because I know I didn't cover it all that well. We have a couple of more callers with questions, and I'm going to check. Sierra, do we have any questions from the chat room?
Actually, no questions, but my good friend Ann Eller is here, Alexandria, and she said thank you for showing her video ET Contact Planet X on Forbidden Knowledge. So that's a personal thank you through a good friend of mine.
Well, my pleasure. Yes, she contacted me, and you know, because it is a copyrighted piece, so not everyone would get to play it. But so it was an honor to get to play it. You know, and she's a you know, real historical figure in this whole enterprise of understanding ourselves and the cosmos, and so that was, you know, I was very gratified that she asked me to play her program.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for me.
Okay. All right. Well, we are going to move on with some more callers. Next up, we have Ralph. Hang on a second. There you are. Hello, Ralph. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air, Ralph.
Hi.
Have a question?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I had a question for Alexandra. I appreciate your website. I went out to your website and just had a plethora of information there, just some awesome, awesome information. But my curiosity right now is about your comment you made about the dwarf star, the Elenin, kind of coming this way. And basically, you have given some information that's kind of juxtaposed to some of the information that some other researchers have done about that object. And I was curious what foundation do you have for that information? Because it seems as though you're kind of downplaying the effect that it's going to have on the Earth, and I'm just curious as to where are you basing that on?
Okay, I'm basing it on my general education in the area of astrophysics, which is, you know, I'm not a hardcore scientist, but I'm very deeply interested in the subject. I wrote a book called 2012, Science or Superstition, where I really got very involved in the study of astrophysics and the study of the search for the brown dwarf, which could be the explanation for the precession of the equinoxes. That our celestial sphere changes like a clock, that there are ages on Earth that are a little over 2,000 years, and many civilizations have noted this. And, you know, good observers and record keepers of the stars have been aware of it, and they've developed different kinds of astrologies. But the Western astrology is based on an old Babylonian system, which came into Europe during the Renaissance, I believe, or Middle Ages, and the Maya had an amazing system. You know, theirs is arguably more accurate because they made it themselves. It didn't come from somewhere else. But this idea of world ages is present in ancient Roman civilization, ancient Greek, definitely in Hindu to the present day. In astrology, that's what it's all about. It's a world age doctrine, basically, and the Maya had it, and probably many others that we don't even know about, that, you know, from civilizations past. And so I'm not saying that something might not be out there that could slam it. The Earth has been repeatedly slammed with extraterrestrial objects that have been probably responsible for mass extinctions, and then the rise of different animals, like human beings, as the story goes, really developed after the dinosaurs were extinguished. 65, you know, it made mammals possible, you know, that they could thrive because they didn't have the threat of dinosaurs, you know, eating them all the time, so that mammals could develop. And I got in touch with a group that's fascinating. It's the Holocene Impact Working Group, and it's headed up by a woman named Dallas Abbott, who's at Columbia University in New York. And it's an interdisciplinary group which investigates extraterrestrial impacts that have happened since the last ice age, and that's called the Holocene. We're living in the Holocene epoch right now. And that's within the last 12,500 years or so. And so, you know, people don't really want to get real about the subject of this, but it's something that does happen. And there are things that are like a kilometer wide that impact the Earth on a schedule of about once every 5,000 years. And there's a great study of this called Cycles of Fossil Diversity that was written by, I think, an earth scientist at Berkeley. It was written by two, now I'm forgetting their names, but this work has been seminal for many other scientists' work, including Richard Firestone, who's also, well, he's in the University of California system. I'm not sure if it's Berkeley or if it's here in L.A. So I'm not poo-pooing the idea of extraterrestrial impacts and maybe even one sitter soon. I'm also not poo-pooing the idea that there may be a brown dwarf twin to our sun. That is definitely what they were looking for it in the last WISE infrared survey. And if they found it, they haven't admitted it. Because that was, but now they're sending out two more that have even higher resolution. But what they're thinking is that if there is a brown dwarf twin to our sun, and if we haven't really been able to see it after that last survey, then this thing must, you know, it's a very unusual dwarf in that it's so distant, and most binary systems, in fact, most stars in our galaxy and probably everywhere are either binary or more systems. It's more rare to have a singular sun than to have multiples orbiting around each other. But they're closer, you know, in general, on average, the dwarf or the other member of the binary system is usually closer than whatever this object is. So there is, officially anyway, from NASA and the people who do that for a living, they think that they're not leaving out the possibility that there's a brown dwarf, but it's becoming less and less likely to them because the characteristics that they observe in more common binary systems are just not, you know, happening here because we haven't found it. Now, they're talking about Elenin might be a neutron star, which is a totally different animal. Like a brown dwarf is sort of similar to a gas giant like Jupiter, except that it's more compacted usually. It'll have greater mass, like maybe five times the mass of Jupiter, but it'll be more dense, and it might not be warmer than 200 degrees. So if they're very hard to see, they don't emit photons, and the thermal radiation that they release is pretty small. You know, it's like a cup of coffee or something, and that's not easy to see, especially if it's far away. A neutron star is a different thing. I played something about neutron stars today. Neutron stars are products of collapsing, you know, supernova-ing stars. When a star is in the last phase of its life, it explodes, and what's left are neutron stars that sometimes can be binary. And there are people like Barbara Hand Clow, for example. There was a supernova of Vela, a star that's not very far from us. Back, she says that this was probably the cause of the megafauna extinction that happened at the end of the Ice Age, and whatever it is that mainstream science doesn't really want to talk about, which is, yeah, what really happened? How did the last Ice Age end? Like, it's like they're not looking. They don't want to talk about that subject. They'll talk until the cows come home about the event 65 million years ago with the dinosaurs, but they don't want to talk about this thing that just happened, you know, less than 13,000 years ago, where there was mass extinction of the mammoths, the saber-toothed tigers, and giant ground sloths. There were species of camel in North America back then, you know, all kinds of, I think there were lions way up into Siberia that were much bigger, you know, like bigger versions of the lions today that you find. And so what's up with that? What happened with, there's a lot of interesting theories about how it happened and then what it really meant that animals of that size could thrive and that they just don't seem to make them that big anymore. Like what's happened to, and then some people suspect that it is the waning electromagnetic field of the Earth that makes this not favorable for large, you know, mammals the way we used to have on Earth, and that this might have something to do with a impending geomagnetic reversal, which science absolutely agrees we're in the middle of one, and commonly it takes about 5,000 years, and usually doesn't is not a catastrophic event. The sun changes its polarity every 11 years, and, you know, it doesn't kill us, and that's the sun. So the thing that a geomagnetic reversal is going to be catastrophic is just not borne out by the geological record. You know, with other things, you know, like whatever that knocked our Earth off kilter 23 degrees, you know, that might have been from a stellar fragment from this supernova. That's what Barbara Handclough puts forward and was responsible for the mass extinctions of large mammals at that time. And that's what Richard Firestone, who's an astrophysicist in the University of California, also, that's his theory. I don't think he thinks it's a stellar fragment, but that would be like a neutron particle, you know, like chunk, if you will. I mean, and it's flying really fast, and that's the kind of thing that NASA can't really predict. And that, yes, that's a disaster that could happen, and they don't have the ability to see something that's moving that fast and coming in. You know, it's like we'll know afterwards. They've said as much.
Yeah.
About a situation like that.
Okay.
Well, I need to interrupt
you
here.
Thank you so much, took forever, and I could keep going on and on because it's like it touches on everything. Like mythology is a coded language that describes astronomic events at a time before there was scientific language to describe these things. And so
that's right up your alley with your study of, is it pronounced semiotics?
Semiotics, yeah.
Semiotics.
That's what I mean.
We have Renee who's calling in, and I know her time is limited. So I need to just get to Renee real quickly here, and then we'll be back. We only have about 4 minutes left. So, Ralph, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, I'm sorry my answer was so long.
Okay. That's okay. We are going to bring on right now Renee Barnett. Hello, Renee. We're so glad
Hi.
To
Hi, everybody. Oh, man, what an interesting conversation you guys are having.
Yeah,
I wish I could listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, well, it's always in the archives. We only have 2 minutes, Renee, so go.
Oh, I just wanted to let everyone know, I came on last week to let everybody know that because of my latest appearance on the Starseed Radio Academy, I was asked by a lot of different people, when are you going back to France? You know, are you going to do another tour? Had not planned it at all. So this came strictly out of the Starseed group, and we decided, my partner in the tour is Gloria Amendola, and I decided, well, you know, we were planning a research trip anyway, so we may as well take some friends along with us. So I just wanted to let everyone know that we now have the itinerary ready for the special Bloodline Mystery Tour, which will be from October the 2nd to the 8th. We're going to the Languedoc region of southwest France. We're following the trail of the Holy Grail. We'll be going to many of the sites that we filmed at in the film Bloodline, which I produced, but also more sites. And so the itinerary is ready. I'll send it over to you guys at Starseed Academy. But also, anyone that wants a copy of it, please give me an email at reneekbarnett@gmail.com. That's R-E-N-E-K Barnett. @gmail.com, or you can go to nightvisionproductions.com, and I think there's a way to email through that site too. So thanks to you guys for calling on us to do this tour. I really appreciate it. We hadn't planned it, but sometimes things work out better that way. So we got a wonderful itinerary plan. I don't want to take up any more of your time, but I wanted to give that information out. And if you didn't get that email information, please email Lavendar or Ariel, and I'm sure they'll be happy to forward it on to me.
We sure will. Thank you so much, Renee. We're glad you made it. Okay.
Thank you. And I'm going to have to listen to this show in the archives, you guys.
Okay.
Take care.
You will. Bye-bye.
Bye. Love you all.
Bye. We only have about 1 minute left, and I'd just like to take some of that time to thank you so much. You're going to have to come back because I know you have so much to talk about and so much knowledge to share. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to learn all the things that everybody's doing. And including yourself. This is great work you're doing, and I really appreciate you, and thank you so much.
You are so welcome, and we will be calling on you to come back and talk to us some more. So I want to thank everyone in the chat room, everyone who's listening. Thank you for joining us. We're here every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will be back next week. Remember, Mercury's retrograde, so make your plans carefully. Lavendar and Sierra, thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you.
It's been a great show. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're so welcome. So good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.